Hi, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. Good morning to you. That is Nick Wright. Good morning to you, sir. You got 27 pens. We're good to go. But before we do, we want to pay tribute to our nation's military veterans, part of the fabric of who we are and who we continue to be at Fox Sports for 25 years. Over the course of the morning, we'll have a group of active and retired servicemen and women here with us in studio, mainly to side with me when things get out of hand between these two. Welcome, you guys in the studio. We appreciate it. Great to have you here. Let's dive in, as we said. We'll start with a little Thursday night football to kick off the morning. Panthers at Steelers, but it was really just Steelers at Steelers. Pittsburgh had everything working last night en route to a 52-21 win. Big Ben threw for over 300 yards, 5 touchdowns. The only downside in a great win, James Conner had to leave with a possible concussion. But the Steelers beaten up big time on the Panthers. Here's Big Ben after last night's game.
It's a good feeling to play a good football team. I mean, we know they're a really good football team, and they came out and drove down the field and scored, and we're like, all right, we're going to, you know, this is what we expected. We got to put up a lot of points. And, you know, we did that. And the defense, they were playing like their hair was on fire. And so it was a lot of fun for all parties involved.
We were fortunate. The ball was rolling downhill tonight. You know, you'd like to think you're that good, but you're probably not.
I tell you what, sure enough was a humbling piece of pie. But not only that, it was a learning experience for a lot of guys. And, you know, if we expect to be as good as we expect us to be, we have to find ways to win games like this in a hostile environment. You know, it was extremely loud. You know, we played against a very talented team, like I said before, and we just got to find ways to win football games. You know, we had a lot of – our nose was bleeding early on, and we just got to stop it. Stop it and find ways to, you know, keep things going in our favor, offensively, defensively, and special teams, you know, and we just got outplayed today.
So, Nick, what did we learn about the Steelers after their big win last night?
Well, Mike Tomlin said it. I hadn't heard that quote until right then, but I had written down first thing on my page was, this is a snowball game. He said a ball rolling downhill. This is, you see these games every once in a while in the NFL, even amongst good teams, mm-hmm. where all of a sudden you think things are going one way, and then a couple enormous plays go the other way, and the rope is let go of. Like, they you can't get it back. And
nothing you can do.
Nothing you can do. That is what happened to the Carolina Panthers yesterday. Now, the Pittsburgh Steelers are the people that did it to them. And what this tells you about the Steelers is they are now, as we are in the midst of November, the best version of what we thought they could be at the beginning of the year, mm-hmm. which is the team they were last year pre-Ryan Shazier injury. Which is their defense is back to that level of play.
This last winning stretch, their defense has played great.
Absolutely. Their offense, see, mm-hmm. has been vintage Steelers offense of this era, right. and that's without Le'Veon Bell. And you're seeing a team right now that I would have to imagine jumps near the top of the list of any AFC contender.
In the last 5 years, on a regular basis, top four teams in the NFL, typically you're going to have the Pittsburgh Steelers in there.
Yep.
Last night, they showed you some of the reasons why. They got really good players, and now it was supported by their defense. We've talked about a lot on this show that defense has not been the same since late last season when Ryan Shazier gets knocked out, ending his career. It took them offseason. They could not. There is no replacement for a guy who was an all-pro in the conversation for defensive MVP last yep. year. It seems like defensive coordinator, they've gotten it together. They're starting to make plays, and especially when the Pittsburgh Steelers can put pressure on you, put pressure on the quarterback, and they can turn you over. The defense doesn't have to be great, a lot like New England. You know, New England doesn't have a lot of pressure, but what they're going to do is try to play good red zone defense. I believe this defense can play to a level very close to where they were last night. But you have to listen to Mike Tomlin's words and listen to him carefully. When you have a game like this, you have to make sure that the team does not believe or read too much into the hype. No, the Pittsburgh Steelers aren't that good. And
as good as they looked last night.
No, they're right. not. And that's the way you have to coach them, because the film will make them think, wow, man, we should be the favorite for the Super Bowl. And then on the other side, for Carolina and Ron Rivera, this is what he's got to be concerned about. making sure his team and Cam Newton, that they don't get into a losing streak and realize that they're not as bad as they play.
And, well, and the other thing for Carolina, Cam Newton, Ron Rivera, what they should be concerned about is there's two different football teams. It's not they go as Cam goes. It's where's the football game being played?
Yes.
Is the game in Carolina? Because they're 5-0, scoring 32 a game. Is the game anywhere else? Because they're 1-3, scoring less than 21 a game. Like, that continued last night. And the other systemic issues for the Panthers are about their secondary, and I'm sure we'll get into more of those later. But for Pittsburgh, go ahead, C.
It's one thing, too. It's about matchup. You say styles are like fights, Jenna. You know, certain styles of certain boxers match up well against other ones. This Carolina team, if you look at who's the last team they struggled with, Atlanta Falcons. What did they play predominantly? Three-receiver offense. So you're talking about their secondary is going to struggle. This is one of those kind of things where I don't believe Carolina matches up with the base offense that the Pittsburgh Steelers and all the weapons, the two tight ends, three or four wide receivers, a couple different running backs, I don't think they match up well with them.
I thought Ben Roethlisberger said it best. It's a good feeling to beat a good team. They came out, this is a good opponent for them, and they just, as you would say, mollywopped him. Probably one of the more complete games they've put together all season long. They did have James Conner leave the game with what many believe is a concussion, and you wonder where that falls in now that we have Tuesday's deadline for Le'Veon Bell reporting approaching.
I don't think it will affect Le'Veon Bell because at this point, him and his attorney and their camp, his business managers, they should know exactly what they're doing. I hope that they're not living day by day the
news.
You
think they do? You think this was what they've known all along, that they were going to?
No, I don't know. I'm certain they didn't know all along what they were going to do.
Whatever happened in last night's game should not have. They should have known before kickoff last night
what they're doing
on Tuesday.
Yeah, it's not as if they have some extra leverage over the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, I do believe whatever they were going to decide to do, and I hate to tell you, Jenna. Jenna keep asking me, what's he going to do, Chris? What's he going to do, see? What's he
going to
do?
I want to know.
And I said, Jenna, I don't know. I really don't know. I don't believe the concussion will affect what they decide to do next. I think he's going to report before Tuesday. And now Pittsburgh Steelers, they have a mini bye. You play on that Thursday night. A lot of guys get banged up, but you do have the extra time to be able to recover.
But we'll see, you know, if this is, in fact, a concussion, as it's been reported, how he recovers from it, how he proceeds through the protocol. You know what it might affect? How warmly and quickly he's received by his teammates, he being Le'Veon Bell, because all of a sudden you go from Le'Veon Bell, how much do we really need him, to, oh, we're on a roll. Right. A huge part of that has been a very effective running game. We might actually need him. Now, I know we don't expect Le'Veon to step in and make an instant impact the level James Conner has, but the Conner injury was the only negative from this entire game for Pittsburgh. Like, this was a critical game for them because, yes, they had been going well, but this was the best team they had played in this stretch over this month of football. And this game could have gone the other way. First drive of the game, Carolina was
marched.
It just marched right down the field. They couldn't figure out who was getting the carry, if it was Cam or if it was McCaffrey. Mm-hmm. When Cam kept the ball, there were receivers open. Like, it looked, and then immediately Juju has the huge play, and then they call what I thought was a great blitz that forced Cam to where, I can't take a safety, I got to throw it away, and they make a play there, and all of a sudden, that snowball's rolling downhill, as Mike Tomlin said.
And when you talk about how much they need James Conner, to go back to that for a second, Big Ben had completions to 9 different guys last night, so he was able to spread the offense and get a lot of people involved. So perhaps another reason why they don't have to rush him back that quickly. Coming up, is Ezekiel Elliott right? Is Sunday a must-win for the Dallas Cowboys? He thinks so. That's next on First Things First. Check out They Fight. It's the latest film in the Fox Sports new documentary series entitled Magnify. Executive produced by Drew Brees, Tony Parker, Michael Finley, and Derek Brooks. The doc follows an after-school boxing program in Washington, D.C. It is Sunday on Fox. You can check your local listings. It looks intense.
So unlike some of the other Magnify movies that Fox has come out with, we haven't seen this, the preview of this yet. But this is, I think, arguably the best thing we do as a network. Gabe Spitzer and his team, this new documentary series. It is in line with any of the best sports doc series you've seen. This one I've heard great things about. Set your DVRs. If you're watching football, just set your DVRs. Watch it when you can. It's going to be great. I haven't seen this one, but it looks awesome.
Yeah, a lot like Jenna, I'm a huge fan of boxing, the technique, the overall what it takes to be boxers. You see where they were underwater? He was training them how to hold their breath, and the guy was still working on his jabs. It's amazing. We're into it.
And all of these stories have a very human side. It's a sports story with a very human side. So I'm very excited to watch this one.
It's called They Fight. It is on Sunday on Fox. Again, check your local listings. We look forward to it. We're going to get to the Dallas Cowboys in just a second. But first, check out an amazing touchdown grab by Alex Bachman of Wake Forest.
All right, see.
Okay, Alex. I like it, too. Now, Alex, I need you, before you jump, I need you to put your hands a little bit lower because they're going to call that. Also, Alex, because the defender has on black jersey.
How about you wear some black gloves?
I need you to wear some black gloves, bro. Everything else, excelente. Put your hands down a little bit. Get them on his waist so they won't call that. Put you some black gloves on. Back
the
shoulder
black
face.
Gloves are for?
So they blend in with the jersey. So
gotcha.
They
for the referee. They don't know. I'm trying to give them a little advantage. That's what it's about.
Now I know for when I play. On to high school football in South Dakota. Check this out. Two-point conversion run by Austin Thune. Stall, but he tosses it back to the quarterback, who then throws a completion.
Hold on. Illegal men downfield. What are you doing, South Dakota high school refs? Come on, this is, I hope this wasn't a game deciding. This is a football championship? 9A? Come on, guys. Look at the left tackle. He's 8 yards into the end zone.
Let me tell you guys something. I know you didn't see. Y'all realize it's only 8 guys on each other. This is 8-man football.
Yeah, well, so are you allowed to go illegally down the field in 8-man
football? No. But did you know that it's 8-man football?
I thought they were trips north side of the field.
Hey, no, South Dakota. That's how it's going down, baby.
They ain't got enough people?
No, I mean, I didn't say all that. That's a good way to start. All right.
All right, on to the NBA.
How to play tackle football.
Celtics, Suns. Watch Marcus Smart with the steal and the dime to Jaylen Brown.
All right. I might have been the only person in America watching this.
No,
game.
Come on, nerdy. I was with you.
You were with it?
Absolutely.
Listen, there was a doubleheader on TNT. There was the great Thursday night football game. Thank God for three screens. This game, Phoenix had a 22-point lead.
And then what happened?
Boston and Kyrie.
And then who?
Kyrie.
After a shower, shave,
Kyrie.
And a haircut, I'm telling you, people
have
changed their life.
Last we have another random dunker in a dimly lit gym showing off the hops.
Wait. I got to watch this one again. All right, so
that's off a vertical, off 2 feet.
But
didn't even move.
That part.
Over the homie's head.
Oh, man.
That's NBA, that's why we need to have an open category. I don't care if you've been to no college, no NBA experience. Open category, slam dunk champion against the 5 best in the NBA. One category NBA winner matched up against the world's best dunkers. Look at that right there.
I'm just going to go call Adam Silver because I can't anymore. It's a great suggestion every day. Back to the NFL. The Cowboys heading up to Philadelphia to take on the defending Super Bowl champion Eagles. Dallas coming off a brutal loss to Tennessee on Monday night. Sitting at 3-5, Ezekiel Elliott was asked if this week was a do-or-die game for the Cowboys' playoff chances.
100%. Yeah, it's a must-win. I mean, we got, being a division game, you know, it makes it that much more important. And definitely the ones must-win. Us versus the world. You know, we got to go out there and win as many ball games as we can, you know, to give ourselves the opportunity to get in the playoffs. So, I mean, we need to attack that the right way and prepare so we're ready.
They get to come into our house, Sunday Night Football. You know, everyone's always excited for the Cowboys in general. Now it's national television, all that fun stuff. So for us, we really just simplify it one game at a time, and we're excited. We're definitely excited for this matchup.
You know, Zeke, with the us against the world mentality, if you listen to all the pundits, yeah, it's a little bit of us against the world. A lot of people are down on Dallas and don't think they have a shot this year. But if you look the other side, what is the key to the Eagles, CC, beating the Cowboys?
I want to see Golden Tate. I want to see him. You've made this trade during the season. You're the world champ. It's obviously you've gone all in to try to repeat. I want to see in with a week, how do they get him up to speed? How they try to get him the ball, where do they consider to be his strong suit? As we saw last week when Dallas traded for Amari Cooper immediately in the game, you could see, as Nick said and pointed out, man, they tried to justify that trade. I'm getting ready to show you guys that he's good so that they won't get criticized for it. So Philadelphia, how they're going to move the ball around. I just believe they have not been great on offense. They have not been great on third down. People will say, well, let me go after their defense and everything. I want to see their offense function because ultimately, if they're going to win, just like last year, as good as that defense was, they did come up with the big sack and strip fumble in the Super Bowl. But if their offense in the NFC Championship in the Super Bowl had not been uber spectacular, they would not be the world champion. So my eyes are going to be on that offense and seeing how they distribute the ball and see if they can get some of those explosive plays back.
I'm glad you mentioned Golden Tate because while he's not the guy I'm focused on, I'm focused on this. The front office has done everything you could ask for as a player over the last 2 years. If you play for the Eagles, this team is spending to the cap, mm-hmm. adding guys during the season, retaining almost everyone from a Super Bowl champion team while still adding additional guys like Bennett and Nada, trying to bring mm-hmm. in a yes. better deep threat in Mike Wallace, doing all these things this year, trading for Golden Tate. Now it's up to the players to go be more than an average football team. This Eagles team hasn't won back-to-back games all year. They've only had one game all year where they've had an explosive offensive performance. That was against the woeful Giants. Like, it is now, you've had eight games to recognize you were Super Bowl champs. You don't get to carry that with you. It's a new season, and you're in the great position of, as an added bonus after your bye, you get to knock out the Dallas Cowboys with a win. You get to eliminate them from contention. The Giants eliminated themselves. You win this weekend. Cowboys are done, too. It's you and Washington, and Washington might have knocked itself out with the injuries last week. So go show that last year's that you are more 2013 Seahawks than one of the flash in the pan Super Bowl teams that we've seen. Go show that you have some sustainability in Philadelphia.
And CC, everything is set up for them to do it. They've got a division where at this point anybody could still basically, besides the Giants, take it. They've got a great shot to do it mm-hmm. if they could put it all together, which Doug Peterson keeps saying, well, we got to be better down the stretch. Well, this is it. You're in it right now.
I think last night the Pittsburgh Steelers sent a great example. We've seen it in New England, the way that they're recalibrating their running game. No problem. They got better hands than you, Jenna.
Clearly.
I saw it. That's okay. But at this point is when it starts, the weather starts to change. You want to start to see those differences. You want to start to see that we're analyzing ourselves. We're self-scouting ourselves. That we start to improve in areas. Not making excuses, but things are starting to be addressed. That the players are coached up in a different way, that they start to look better. So it becomes very important. I think the thing that Nick and Jenna, we've been in Philadelphia, we've been around this team an awful lot through the years. Man, nothing's like being able to do something bad to the Dallas Cowboys. So you talking about an opportunity for them. Man, let's write our season. Let's get a big win. Sunday night football at home. The national audience will be watching. But Dallas at 3-6? Oh, man, their season would be over with. The best they could do is 7-game winning streak. It'd be 10-6. No, that's the little cherry on the top that the Eagles, I'm sure that the players in that locker room are very, very aware of.
And you know who the last month, despite them being 2-2, the last month has been holding up his end of the deal? The presumptive league MVP from last year, Carson Wentz. Over the last four games, once Carson Wentz got back in it after the knee injury, right? So they played eight games. He missed the first couple, comes back. First couple games, going to take him a little bit to get his legs under him, literally and figuratively. The last month of football. How about a 120 passer rating, completing 73% of his passes, 10 touchdowns, one pick? If Wentz is playing at that level, mm-hmm. why are you 2-2? Why were you 2-2 when it was Foles and a compromised Wentz, and 2-2 when he's playing at that level? Because the team as a whole has not shown enough consistency. They haven't found a way to replace Jay Ajayi, and their receivers,
yes.
I would say the reason they go get Golden Tate is the receivers, aside from Ertz, have been disappointing. Like, okay. You have everything working in your favor. A winnable division. A front office that's as aggressive as any team in the league. You have, I think, one of the better home field advantages in football. Go impose your will on a Cowboys team that is on a short week and reeling. A Cowboys team that is questioning in the front office, did we give up a top five pick? Like, do we need a new coach and a new quarterback? Who are we really? The Eagles should win this game. If they are anything like what we thought they were at the beginning of the year, they should win this game by double digits.
We will talk about this from the Cowboys' perspective again coming up. Eric Mangini is going to join us in just a little bit. But coming up, could Dez Bryant make a contribution this Sunday already? Sean Payton thinks so. Next on First Things First.
I'm Technical Sergeant James Blount, 8th Fighter Wing, Tucson Air Base, South Korea. And I've got one message to say. Go
Little love for Da Bears from overseas. Welcome back to First Things First, where today we are honoring our active and retired servicemen and women. And special thank you to the 8th Fighter Wing Airmen. They're currently stationed in South Korea. Mm. That's not stopping them from rooting for Chicago. They need all your help.
They're doing all right. We don't believe in them because of Mitch Trubisky. They're in first in their division. They got Detroit this weekend. Probably beat up Matt Patricia.
They're going to win the division?
I don't know if they're going to win their division. I think they're going to win this week. I think those folks are going to be happy this week.
Yeah, if they're Bear fans, they know what I wish for them.
What?
What's that?
We're in the same division.
Bears weren't. The Bears were your third tier rival.
Oh yeah, they weren't. Yeah, they got the name changed. They were the Chicago Cubs. Okay. They were little baby Bears. They weren't the 85 monsters of the Midway.
All right, time for stories to start your morning. It was a rough night for Cam Newton. He threw a pick six and his team lost by 30. After the game, he described the loss as a piece of humble pie. Nick, is humble good when choosing pie? And two, what did you think of Cam's night last night?
I like Cam's malapropisms, man. Cam's got some good
ones
now.
Okay, what?
Where, like, he says things like hindsight's 50-50.
A little Yogi Bear, but he doesn't mean to.
Yeah, he set up, really? He got served a piece of
humble. Yogi Bear gone sideways.
Yeah, exactly. Where he talked about, remember last year he said, we're the Titanic? But he meant it in a good way. It's endearing to me. What I thought about Cam last night was he made one really bad play, that pick six. But even on that play, like, he was – it wasn't a play where he had a lot of options. He was going to take a safety. Right. He can't get grounding there. He has to throw it near a receiver and ends up getting returned the other way. He wasn't the reason they lost, but he didn't stop the bleeding. Once they got after the pick six, they needed points on the next drive. He couldn't get them down the field.
More important than anything happened in this game. Do you have to pay extra every month for the word club? Like, if you include the word in a sentence, like, do they show you, like, how to use this in your broadcast career? Do they show you how to teach these words to other people? Like, when you're teaching your daughter to speak the right way?
Malapropism is a good one.
That was great.
And it was used perfectly. Yeah. And, yes, I get bonus points
in
the club.
It's not used perfectly when you're...
I'm not in a word club.
All right, here we go. We got some stuff to tell you. It's about the Packers. They'll look to get their season on the right track against the Dolphins at Lambeau. If they want to make the playoffs, they'll have to do much better than the first 8 games when they finished 3-4-1. See, you expect the Packers to turn this around this weekend?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Absolutely. You can believe that right now it's go time for them. The month of November, they can't afford any more time in their season. It's just hard to believe that the best player in the NFL would struggle year in and year out. So, yes, Dolphins, they don't travel too well, and that temperature happens to be around freezing or below. It's going to be a little chilly in Green Bay this week, around 35 degrees.
I did a little parlor game with the staff earlier this week where I tried to, from memory, say every team in the NFL's record. Let's see if I could do it through nine games, whatever it was. The one I got wrong was Miami. I went 31-32. Miami's got 5 wins.
Yes.
I don't know how they've got 5 wins. I know you were there for the first one, that 9-hour game. Mm-hmm. They've won 4 since then. I don't want to live in a world where Miami's got 2 more wins than a team Aaron Rodgers has. Unless Dan Marino's
with their
coming
backup quarterback,
right,
too.
With Brock Osweiler. So the Packers are nearly double-digit favorites this week. Clearly, Vegas thinks they're better than what their record says they are. If they can't win this week, when they're going to Minnesota and to Seattle the next 2 weeks, the Packers are finished. This is an absolute must-win for them. Miami, on the other hand, they could get, I guess, to 6 wins. Still don't know how.
I don't want to live
What's
in a
the Titans
world
record?
Osweiler.
What, the Titans record?
Yeah.
Come on, man.
What is it?
C.
Why?
Hey. 4.
Nicely done.
My staff, I hate y'all.
No, they didn't say anything to me.
I know someone
They didn't say anything to me.
Mm. Finally, the Bucks blew the doors off the Warriors, 134-111. Even worse for Golden State, Steph Curry suffered a strain to his left abductor. He'll have an MRI this week. Warriors also without Draymond Green last night. Nick, what was your reaction to what happened in Golden State?
Let me just go to the Bucks quickly. The Bucks are a real contender to come out of the East. This could be a finals matchup. Mm-hmm. The Bucks have, I believe, the best player in the East. They are all of a sudden defending at the level they always should have been able to with that length. They actually are shooting threes for the first time in years this year. So that's a real team. On the other side of things with Steph, this is the only fair knock on Steph Curry as a player. he can get dinged. He's going to miss some time. He's missed time with multiple ankle injuries throughout his career. Mm-hmm. We've seen a couple soft tissue injuries now. This is the downside to being, I don't know if we can blame this injury on his size. I don't even know if we can blame the ankle injury on his size. But, like, for he's a guy, of all the great players we have in the league, the truly great, great players, he and Anthony Davis are the two that you got to say going to miss some time throughout the course of the year. He is playing the highest level he's ever played going into last night prior to the injury. I hope he's not out an extended period of time. I would imagine they will be super conservative with him because mm-hmm. they're the Warriors and they don't actually need him. But that is the only knock on Steph is he gets dinged up.
Yeah, Nick, you talked about him playing at a super high level. What do the numbers say from a historic standpoint, shooting the basketball, like starting the season?
So his effective field goal percentage, which is where they incorporate threes being worth more than twos, all this type of stuff, he's at around 65%. To give that some context, LeBron's most efficient year ever in Miami was at 61%. Anthony Davis this year is around 50%. He's at 65%. Durant, think about what a great year Durant's having.
Yes.
Durant's at 59%. Like, Steph, what he's doing, this was the first game all year. Of course, he didn't hit a three. He had a stretch where he'd hit at least five threes and I think seven straight games. I think most people thought, no one would ever do what he did his unanimous MVP season. Up until the injury last night, he was duplicating that plus about 10%. He was playing at a level I didn't think was reachable again, which is why this injury is such a bummer for NBA fans, whether you root for the Warriors or not.
Do I need to find a new guy now?
No. He's still your guy.
Jenna's been jinxing people. Yesterday she said, I'm going to get on your corner, Nick, with Cam Newton. And
guess
what happened. My corner, she's been anti-Cam Newton all year. He playing MVP level. She hops on Cam's corner one day, they lose.
All right.
Hops on Steph's corner.
Listen.
My question is, in the abductor injury, is that his left groin, right groin, middle groin?
Why don't we worry about that in a commercial break? After being out of football since April, Dez Bryant wasted no time getting back in. He practiced with the Saints for the first time yesterday. Head coach Sean Payton said earlier this week he wanted the 30-year-old wide receiver to lose a little weight. Those are fighting words in my circles, which is, I come from like 10 minutes away, so not big circles. Coach also said Dez could play as early as this Sunday when the Saints play the Bengals. Here is Dez Bryant after practice yesterday.
Who wouldn't want to play, with Drew Brees? not taking away from nobody else, but you got a guy like Drew Brees. Like I said, you got a guy like Michael Thomas, Watson, Alvin Kamara, Mark Ingram, got those types of guys, little baby goats, around here. I'm going to always be me, who I am, and I'm not a bad guy. I've always been a good guy. You can ask my teammates and my ex-teammates how I am. I love the locker room, it's like family. Every locker room that I've been in, middle school, high school, college, is out. To the pros, it's always been like a family, have a natural bond. It's more than just being in the locker room, it's outside of it too.
What's the vision that they've had for you in terms of just what you're going to do for this offense?
I'm leaving that up to coach. Whatever you have for me, I'm gonna get myself ready for it.
All right, CeCe, we know that Sean Payton said he'd like to perhaps use him this week, but how soon before you can actually make an impact in this offense?
I think a couple weeks. Now, they could throw him out there. They could throw him out there, but I don't believe, especially with some of the stuff that he said. Now, I do believe Sean Payton, from a coaching standpoint, he has an advantage. Yeah. When you have a player like that, is he going to play? Hey, I like him. Oh, man, he's looking good and everything. He's at practice. I would make the Bengals prepare for Dez Bryant. I would make them look up some film of what Dez Bryant does well. I would eat up the time that we have, because in the NFL, everyone's got the same amount of time. But if I can make you spend more time doing more things, how great are you going to be at the really specific details? So I believe Sean has an advantage in doing this. I still think it takes a couple weeks. Now, Drew Brees, can he get Dez Bryant open? Can he throw him open? Yes, I do believe that. But I believe he will be compromised, and he would set himself up for another injury that would give him a setback that they might not see him play until December. So for me, I would be concerned. He missed Wednesday's practice. He was at yesterday's practice Thursday, which is a very intense practice. Today's practice is not that intense. And then on Saturday, they're going to be traveling. So I wouldn't expect him to play this week, but as we talked about, in a couple weeks, they got one game circled on
November
that calendar.
November 29th.
Where they're going back to Big D. And I'm sure that at that point, Sean and Dez have talked about potentially probably that being his coming out party.
A couple days ago, Dez Bryant, they needed him to lose weight, right?
Yes.
About 5 pounds heavy. He's not playing this week. What Sean Payton was doing there, where he says I'm open-minded, is the thing that Jason Garrett and Jerry Jones and the Cowboys should have done with Amari Cooper, which was leave some doubt about what the status is going into the game.
Not tweet the game plan.
Well, and so when the Cowboys traded for Amari Cooper, they were so heavily criticized for giving up the first-round pick. They told anyone who listened, oh, not only is he going to be worth a first-round pick, he's going to make an impact starting this week. He's going to be featured this week. So when the Titans were preparing for the Cowboys, they knew that wasn't going to be wasted time. Mm-hmm. They weren't studying Amari Cooper film kind of half in, half out, like, ah, should we be doing something else? They knew they were going to have to use it. Now, so I think he is using to his advantage the idea that they could use Dez Bryant for the exact reason C is saying, but it wouldn't make sense for him to be able to play right now.
When I came out of retirement, I had played 15 years. I decided to retire, went into broadcasting. The Miami Dolphins, I thought it was after week number 6. On a Monday night game, they lost 3 receivers. Their general manager, Rick Spielman, called me on that Tuesday as the team finally got back down to Miami and asked me, hey, Chris, what kind of shape you're in? Now, I had decided to retire. I was working in television, working here in New York City inside the NFL on HBO. And he asked me what kind of time could it take me to be in shape. Now, my mind had retired. Now, I still had a pretty good workout regimen, but my mind had retired. Dave Wannstedt was the coach then. And they said, man, we're going to bring Chris in. I think he needs to lose a little bit of weight. But, you know, I believe that, man, we might be able to see it. It's promising. We went to practice. Pat Surtain and Sam Madison were playing man-to-man. Man, I had one of those kind of days immediately after practice. Dave Wannstedt said, listen, we're going to get you ready. You're going to be starting. You're going to play. Now, I was 37 at that time, 36, soon to be 37. Dez is 30. Dez's mind and body had not retired. So if he was able to play before that and play a limited role, yes, I could see it happening with Sean Payton. Norv Turner was the offensive coordinator then. So Norv came up with a little package and got me ready like after a bye week, which is still 1 week longer than Dez has. But I'm just saying, at that age, at 36, Dez is 30. Can it be done? Yes, it can be done, especially you have to have an offensive-minded coach like Sean Payton to be able to take care of him.
Listen, that's an awesome story. Here's why I don't know how much of it applies in this situation. By the end of your time in Minnesota, see, you were teaching the offense to people. By the end of your time in Minnesota, you were, when the quarterback didn't know what the play was or couldn't spit it out, you were spitting out for him. By the middle of your time in Minnesota, or halfway through it, you were All-pro wide receiver, doubling as wide receiver coach mentor for Randy Moss, teaching him how to play your position. Dez is none of those things. That's not a knock on him. It's a compliment to you more so because what you were doing was above and beyond. So I say that to say this. I do not, even if he's football ready, even if his body's ready, is his mind ready? Is he able to do things that aren't going to slow down the Saints' operation? Are they don't necessarily always play.
That's a good question.
They don't always play at a super fast pace, but they like to be able to. And so things like that to me are, now, could they potentially, if they're going to activate him, have him just for jump balls in the end zone, right? If we get to the 5-yard line, have him go on the far side of the field, something he's always been very good at. Like that, I don't think you could screw up. So, yeah, potentially. But I don't see a scenario where he plays this week.
So to piggyback off what you're saying, which was what I was going to ask, and you guys make a great point with this, I was going to say, well, what can a guy like Michael Thomas learn from Dez Bryant, who's been in the league? You know, we know about Michael Thomas, phenomenal work ethic. He's in tremendous shape. Doesn't need to do anything else at this point, and then you have a veteran like Dez Bryant come in. Could he serve that role in some capacity this weekend?
You have to realize Michael Thomas, he's had one of those kind of, I wouldn't say a charmed life, but he's been around sports because his uncle's Keyshawn Johnson, who happens to play wide receiver. So Mike, He's been traveling around with football players. He's got relationships with other guys. I'm sure that there can be some connective tissue to what happened to Dez Bryant around the middle of his career. And when he sees Michael Thomas, he's going to be like, man, I have never worked with a wide receiver who works harder than Mike Thomas. His workout, even at this stage of his career, Drew Brees talked to me about it. Sean Payton talked to me about it. It's infectious to the other players there. So I do believe that there is something because Dez played at a high level and he did it. Man, I'm sure that there's some type of regret, and I'm sure that Dez coming in there, he know that's Mike's room. Right. He know that, that's his team. He know that Mike is on the come up as far as getting a new contract. So I'm sure Dez, and you could see yesterday, I had never heard Dez in Dallas locker room say, hey, man, whatever the boss say, you know. Right. No. Yesterday, you could see he knows who the boss is, and that's Sean Payton.
All right, listen, America, I'm going to reveal a little confidence here. It's Friday. My man C has felt, had a great week. He's feeling very happy. He's excited to watch some football. He's being very nice right now. And C also has been critical of Dez Bryant in the past, and now he's getting another chance. And Chris, no matter what interpersonal relationships are, Chris is always rooting for guys to succeed. So I'm going to say what part of Chris's brain wanted to say but didn't. Man, Michael Thomas doesn't need to learn anything from Dez Bryant, except for maybe a few things of what not to do if you reach the heights. Michael Thomas, keep doing what you're doing. Don't let maybe Dez can learn a few things from Michael Thomas. That's what he wanted to say. But we got our troops in the studio. It's Friday. He's
God
in a great mood.
Troops.
Our boss
God
is here.
The
so he's
positive
trying to
Friday,
put a positive
baby.
Spin on everything. Yes. Michael Thomas, you don't need to learn nothing from Dez. All right, man, you just keep doing what you're doing.
Awesome.
If you can help Dez out a little bit, that's fine.
God bless the troops.
Yeah, there
and
you
there
go.
You go.
Thank you.
Period, point blank. Coming up, could the Patriots be on upset alert after winning six in a row?
Ooh, I'm going to tell you something.
Next up,
I'm
going
to stop talking to you. That's for real. That just happened.
Yeah.
Back here, first things first, former head coach Eric Mangini is joining us now. Hey, coach.
What up, coach? Good morning.
Nice to see you. All right, so the Patriots head to Tennessee to take on the Titans on Sunday. New England's won their last six, but the Titans have won their last one. So the Pats aren't taking them lightly. My point, the Pats don't take anyone lightly, at least not in public. Bill Belichick referred to the Titans as a really good, well-balanced football team. All right, coach, so what's the key to avoiding the upset here? Against Tennessee if you're the Patriots?
You could really look back at the last 18 years and you're not going to find one press conference where Bill Belichick doesn't say nice things about the opponent, so
yeah.
We'll just take a step back there. I'd say the difficult thing, the first time that you play the Patriots as a head coach when you're familiar with that system, and they've got Mike and they've also got Dean Pease, the former defensive coordinator, is trying to really get your guys to understand what it takes to beat them. And there's a lot of things that you can take advantage of from inside knowledge, and there's things that you need to avoid from the same perspective, but it doesn't translate right away. But the starting point is going to have to be long, sustained drives. They've got to keep Tom Brady off the field. That's the first thing that they have to do. And then the second thing is they've got to make Marcus Mariota be effective as a runner, because New England's going to take away that aspect. And when Tennessee goes, it goes because he's able to make some plays that are either outside the pocket or design, move the pocket plays, and that helps everything else with this offense. So those are two areas where I think they need to concentrate.
Mariota's coming off what I think was his best game of the year against the – now, it didn't look like it was going to be that way when he had the strip sack that he lost early in the game, but he rallied from there. What the Blake Bortles game notwithstanding this year, it's very hard historically to beat this Patriots team with a – below-average quarterback. So Belichick's record, and you might say, well, that's the case with everyone. Belichick's record over the last 18 years against young quarterbacks, against non-Pro Bowl quarterbacks, against quarterbacks that have some glaring weaknesses, which I think Mariota does, he's up 90-plus percent in all of those categories. So why do I bring that up? I think for the Titans to have any shot in this game, it's got to be a huge run game for them. They have to try to do to the Patriots what the Patriots did when they started their winning streak, which is crush people with the run game and use the threat of the pass as a complement to it. Because I don't think you can take Marcus Mariota and the weapons the Titans have on the outside and use that to your advantage in this football game. I know the Titans are going to struggle with whatever scheme the Patriots cook up offensively, whatever whatever the Patriots see in the film room as this is what we're going to exploit as the Titans' weakness. So I think on the other side of the ball, the clearest path for Tennessee is to rush the ball consistently right at New England with the Henry-Lewis combo and see if that allows long possessions where Mariota doesn't have to do much until you get to the red zone, which is the one area of the field in his career he's been excellent.
Can Tennessee's defense dominate this game and lead them to winning? Because you can't, when you look at the numbers, there's no way you're looking at Tennessee's offense thinking that, wow, they're going to be able to score 28 points. They haven't been able to do that. Tennessee's offense, points per game, they're 29th in the NFL. Points per drive, they're 24th. Yards per drive, they're 30th. Yards per play, they're 30th. So that's some of the worst offensive football
passing
you're going
offense,
to see.
They're 30th.
On the other side, defensively, overall defense, they're number one, points per game. Red zone defense, they're number one. So you have to try to balance this out to be like, man, I need that defense to be able to turn New England over, potentially score on defense, and offensively, how do I attack them? I'm going to try to do a little New England to them. I'm going to try to shorten up the game. I believe that Derrick Henry's got to play a more significant role than he's played earlier this season, and I'm going to slice and dice them with Deion Lewis, their guy. I'm going to put those linebackers in space because I know Belichick's not going to have those linebackers trying to guard Deion too much. That's where I'm going to try. I'm going to try to make it third down and short and try to get conversions, keep Tom Brady, and play to my strength, which happens to be my defense coach.
And defensively, what you have to do is you have to give them something they haven't seen. And New England does that to everybody all the time. But if Tom Brady comes out, and we'd say this in the meeting room, if he knows it goes, if he knows what you're in, it's going to the right spot. So the ability to disguise coverage, the ability to give him something that he's got to adjust to, and then have a second pitch in the second half. Because once they go in and talk about it, they usually come out and light up whoever they're playing. You need to be able to do something else that's a little bit different in the second half. And Mike knows that. Dean knows that. And it gets back to my original point. Can you convey the importance of that to the players? Can they really understand it that this first time that they're facing him with this coaching staff? Mariota as a runner, the run-pass option, the more of that you can keep pushing, forcing them to deal with him as a true runner, that to me will open up things in the passing game and help him have a chance.
Nick, how much have these two teams changed since that divisional playoff game last year? How much are the game plans going into this one? How much
different? Well, I mean, the Titans changed head coach. So, like, that's the most significant
change.
Right,
and typically we don't see that.
Right, if you got to the divisional round of the playoffs, you won a playoff game, a huge comeback against who? Oh, the Kansas City Chiefs. Last year, who was the quarterback in that game, Coach? So, so that's the biggest change. The Titans' personnel is more consistent this year to last year than the Patriots is, at least who the Patriots are going to be trotting out this game. Last year in that game, obviously, they didn't have Julian Edelman. They'll have him here. They did have Gronk. They won't have, or they probably won't have him here. Like, there's, so the Patriots, to me, have had more turnover of personnel, but the Patriots also are the most consistent team in football as far as what their schemes are. They kept their offensive coordinator. Now, they did lose Matt Patricia, but are you seeing anything from the Patriots defensively this year that's different under new coordinator than last year? Because I'm not. Like, it seems like that's Belichick's defense that the – am I wrong?
When you say consistent, the thing that is consistent is they're not going to be consistent.
They're going to change.
Yeah, every week it's changed because – you're going to play Tennessee a lot differently than you play the team that you faced the week before.
But they're all changes, like, within the family.
Within the framework of what they're doing. Yeah. Now, there's some things that have been mixed in that are different. And anytime you add a new personality as a play caller, tendencies tend to change. When you blitz, Matt Patricia blitzed a little bit more than they're blitzing now. So there's some smaller things that go to the human being that's actually calling the plays.
Yeah, one thing from a personnel standpoint, I should think that people should watch is, let's not forget the subplot of Malcolm Butler. Didn't play in the Super Bowl, was dressed, Belichick benched him. Now, I'm going to tell you a lot. Belichick knows a lot more about football. And because Malcolm Butler played so bad in those two previous games, on paper, he would justify his benching. Now, Tennessee, man, they went out and paid Malcolm Butler a lot of money. They thought he was going to be a tremendous add. He has not been. He's played bad football. His confidence is gone. He got beat up last Monday night by Amari Cooper. And you can believe Tom Brady sent a message when he was benched. Oh, Malk, he's one of my buddies and everything. They're coming after him. I believe it's going to be a very emotional game for him going back to New England. But they're going to target him, and they're going to target him often. So, Tennessee, please give him some help in that game.
I can't believe Belichick was right.
And look, it's buyer beware with any players that the Patriots let go or want to trade you. Like, there's probably a good reason why it happened, and you see it every year. If someone goes and they pay someone that's no longer there a ton of money, and it's not quite what they hoped it
would be. You mentioned they might go pick on Malcolm Butler. Is that unsaid? Is that something that is part of the game plan? Is there any? Because Belichick, while he knows what was said around the Super Bowl, he heard all the questions he had to answer for 6 months, even though he wouldn't answer them, about benching Malcolm Butler.
Belichick is like it should be in America, man. He does not discriminate. He don't care who you are, where you are, what your name is, where you are from. What do the numbers say? And Malcolm Butler's been a huge deficit to their defense. So we just, I happen to know some of the intel about him also.
Yeah, and they won't go out of their way to try to force a ball on Malcolm Butler to justify getting rid of Malcolm Butler, but there'll be certain weaknesses that they understand he has,
and they'll wait,
and when the time comes, they'll set him up, and that's when they'll go.
He had a really rough game a couple weeks ago. He's in a rough stretch right now.
All right, Coach, stick around. Got to take a break. Coming up, are the Steelers looking like the favorites in the AFC? That's next on First Things First.
I'm Command Sergeant Major Rodney Plamondon here at Kandahar, Afghanistan, with the 40th Infantry Division, California Army National Guard. I want to give a big shout out to the Oakland Raiders and Raider Nation for life.
All right, the Raiders definitely need his love. Maybe not Chicago didn't before, but the Raiders could use a little overseas love.
Well, they might be able to use his arm. I like that throw motion he had there.
They're
needing
the
quarterback tryouts this offseason.
Yeah, we need to get some troop to fill in for them. They need to go to Oakland and find them. All right?
Back here, First Things First, with Coach Mangini. Today we are honoring our active retired servicemen and women, and a special thanks to the 4th Infantry Division, California Army National Guard, currently stationed in Afghanistan. Not to you guys. All right, back to last night's game, Panthers at Steelers. But let's face it, this was really just Steelers at Steelers. Pittsburgh had everything working last night. En route to a 52-21 win, Ben Roethlisberger threw for over 300 yards, 5 touchdowns. James Conner, their heralded running back this season, had to leave with a possible concussion late in the game. But here is Big Ben after last night's win.
It's a good feeling to play a good football team. I mean, we know they're a really good football team, and they came out and drove down the field and scored, and we're like, all right, we're going to, you know, this is what we expected. We got to put up a lot of points, and, you know, we did that. And the defense, they were playing like their hair was on fire, and so it was a lot of fun for all parties involved.
We were fortunate. The ball was rolling downhill tonight. You know, you'd like to think you're that good, but you're probably not.
All right, Coach, so the Steelers have now won 5 in a row last night, probably the best, most complete game of this 5-game win streak. What did you learn about the Steelers, judging from this win over the Panthers?
Well, to me, it was more just confirmation about what we talked about early in the season, where the sky was falling, just like we talked about with New England. This team, as long as they have Ben Roethlisberger and the complementary weapons, have a chance to do that to anybody any given week. And I've been in that position when I was with San Francisco, and it goes downhill in Pittsburgh, and the floodgates open, and nothing seems to work. What I was most impressed with is the way that he spread the ball around. So many different people got involved.
9.
So it doesn't matter who you're trying to take away. Someone else is hurting you. And he does a nice job of involving everybody who's on the field. And then it gets to the point where defensively you're going to the sideline saying, well, what do we want to take away that next drive? And you're trying to deal with a problem that you just had, or a problem you had the drive before, and you come out and he creates another problem. And then you add all the things that he can do with his feet to extend plays. Look, these guys can hang 40 or 50 on anybody any given week.
And coming into the season, there was going to be a lot of questions. We knew on the defense, but on the offense, people didn't say much, but Todd Haley had left as offensive coordinator. How was their offense going to run? How were they going to change it? Were they going to change the terminology, or are they going to make the new offensive coordinator just teach all the old stuff? And just as I thought, they made him teach the old stuff that they were doing. But as you can see, week number 8, 9, he's starting to add some little wrinkles. Because last night, there was a few plays I was like, I didn't know who was going to get the ball. And the way they influenced the defense on certain misdirections, making you think the ball was going somewhere else as far as motion, they did a bunch of little creative things. So I think their offensive staff really needs to get a lot of credit. When you have a great quarterback like Ben, he's going to be able to distribute the ball, which really helped the offensive coordinator. So for me, that's what I thought was one of the really, really bright spots going into last night. Number one for Cam Newton, though, that first turnover, 7-7. They score on one play, Pittsburgh. You cannot make that play early in a big game on the road like that. You can't try to force to get rid. Take the safety. So what? You give them 2 points. You punt it off to them, a safe kick, and so what? The score is 9-7. It is not the amount of momentum that that defense creates with a pick six. So that Cam Newton trying to throw this ball to Greg Olsen, he should have taken the safety there. That was a bad decision by a good player.
And I know later in the show we're going to talk about this with Coach from the Panthers' perspective specifically, so I'm going to wait on the Cam commentary for then. But I, on the Steelers, to me, This last night's game and this streak and the last few years have been a confirmation about how they do business and that they are very similar, not quite the exact same, but very similar to Green Bay as far as their free agency philosophy. Not a whole lot of guys on Pittsburgh that weren't drafted by Pittsburgh. They just draft so damn well, man. How, like, you look up and down the roster, James Conner, one of their guys, they drafted, they saw the value, they developed. Juju, drafted, saw value, developed. Antonio Brown wasn't some blue chipper coming out of college. Like, they drafted him, saw value, developed. Those defensive ends they got, Cam Hayward and Stephon Tuitt, these are guys that they had put value on. T.J. Watt, pardon me, J.J.'s little brother. Like, aside from Joe Hayden, I can't think of one of their premier players that they went out and acquired. They develop players' talent. They are excellent at figuring out in the draft who will work in their system and getting the most out of those players. And that's what can allow, one of the things that can allow Big Ben to have that many options of who to throw the ball to.
Well, let's also look at the organization. The organization is built on a model of continuity and consistency.
Yes.
And patience. And those things are critical, and it gives them a chance to build up reps not only within the actual team itself, but in the draft room. What are we looking for from a Pittsburgh Steeler in free agency? If you're going to make a trade, all those things are incredibly helpful. And when we talk about force multipliers, this to me is a classic example of that. You get some guys that are lower in the draft, and Ben makes them better. We're not always talking about, God, we got to get him this weapon, we got to get him that weapon, we got to help Ben. Ben helps everybody else. And Vance McDonald, who I had in San Francisco,
yes,
goes to Pittsburgh. He's working with Ben, and you get to see his potential because Ben's able to bring that out of him by who he is.
Yes. Combination between him and Jesse James, the wide receiving core, the running backs they can throw at you. That's why I said from an offensive standpoint, man, they present a lot of problems, and they got a lot of good athletes that they can put in space that can run with the ball after the catch.
And whenever you score 50-plus, we're going to be talking, and we should, most about the offense. But the part of this that has to be, if you're a Steeler fan, most encouraging is this is the fifth straight win. This is the fifth straight excellent defensive performance. The fifth straight game, you've held the opponent to 21 or less. The Panthers drove down the field and scored on a very surgical first possession. The rest of the game, they had one elongated touchdown drive until it was garbage time at the end when it was a 40-point margin. Like, what the Steelers defense did yesterday was just a continuation of what they've done over the last month of football, which is get back to the level of defense they had been playing pre-Ryan Shazier injury.
Well, let's also look organizationally at Le'Veon Bell. So if you're at Pittsburgh Steelers, you're dealing with the Steelers, you know that they're going to mean business. You know that they're going to hold their ground. You know that if you want to pick a fight, that they're going to stand their ground, and that sends a pretty strong message across the board. Now, whether you agree with it or disagree with it, you at least know what you're getting from the organization.
Well, they may be getting Le'Veon Bell back next week. The deadline is Tuesday, and then James Conner. We're going to wait and see how he's doing. He's in concussion protocol. All right, Coach, we'll see you later on in the show. Coming up, Will the LA Rams bounce back after their first loss of the year? That's next on First Things First. All right, we'll get to the Rams trying to rebound in a second, but first, all right, guys, check out this amazing touchdown grab by Alex Backman of Wake Forest.
All right, okay, Backman with the back shoulder fade. What you need, Nick? What's up?
No, go ahead. I want you to.
Oh, Backman, let's do this, bro. They got black jerseys on. Opposition. Hey, wide receiver coaches out there, teach your kids wear the opposite color gloves that the opposition has on. Why? So the refs won't see when you put these two hands on his shoulder pads and push off. Also, Alex, get one hand down by his waistline. Referees will let you get away with the waistline. Can't push him up top by his numbers and everything. They're going to call that one on you, homie. That's a free tip. Wide receivers and wide receiver coaches out there. Bat, bat.
My favorite is that wear the same color gloves as your opponent's jersey. That's a great tip.
On to high school football in South Dakota. Check this out. Two-point conversion run by Austin Thune stalled, but he tosses it back to the quarterback, who then throws a completion exactly how it was drawn up.
All right, see, you probably didn't even notice this, but that's eight-man football. There ain't 11 people on the field right there. And you probably didn't notice left tackle illegally downfield.
Yep.
They thought it's a running play, so he's out pushing into the end zone. That's why you can't throw the ball there. What you doing?
Yeah, Nick, you probably didn't realize this. You got to get up awful early to get up before CC because they don't even play 11-man football in South Dakota.
What? They do somewhere. They can't have it
in the whole state.
State law?
Okay.
Okay.
Read
it.
Tell your staff.
Tell
your staff of eight. All of them with an IQ of over 150 combined. I'm talking about all three of them. Dusty,
on to the NBA. Celtics Suns. Marcus Smart, the steal. The no look to Jaylen Brown.
All right, this game ended up being an excellent game last night. The Suns looked like they were going to shockingly blow out Boston. Boston then comes surging back based on the strength of CC's guy, Kyrie Irving. They win in overtime. This is a very nice pass and play by Smart and Brown, though.
Kyrie's a new player after the haircut, a shower, and a clean shave.
I had to deal with Chris Mannix texting me last night. Mannix, I'm going to block your number, bro. You wasn't texting me early in the year.
Oh, we got another random dunker in a dimly lit gym from
an
interesting perspective.
Look at that.
Now, that's a vertical leap right there. He goes off 2 feet. Over his homie, and then dunks
the
it.
Extension, man. It's a bold play,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he
there.
Had to because with vertical, he jumps off of 2 feet. You're not going to propel yourself forward as much. So he almost miscalculated.
That's what
that
I'm saying. Yeah.
I'm sure there's some other outtakes that aren't as good as this one. I'm sure there's some other one too. Where homeboy's cornrows is getting grazed. Yeah.
All right. Let's talk Rams. The last remaining undefeated team is undefeated no longer after losing to the Saints last weekend. Rams look to get back on track facing the Seahawks Sunday, even though they took their first L. Head coach Sean McVay believes his team's ready to bounce back.
I think, you know, whether you're playing a great division opponent like Seattle or anybody, you know, what you love about football is whether you win or lose, you don't have too long to be able to dwell on that. You got to be able to, in our situation, you know, learn from it and you move forward. And that's what you love. You couldn't wait to get back to work and kind of put it behind you, but make sure you don't avoid some of the things that we have to do better collectively as a team moving forward if we're going to, you know, achieve the outcomes that we want to be able to consistently get.
All right, CeCe, what are we expecting from the Rams after they took their first L from the Saints?
If you look at who their division rivals are, like this was going to be a highly contested game, a game with a lot of energy. Seattle has dominated that division. The Rams knew when they came back to L.A., man, this is the team that we have to beat, Carol. This organization, man, this is the team that we have to – whatever we set up, we got to make sure – that it's going to be good against this team because this is who we're going to be going against in the Seahawks. So there's a great deal of respect there. I expect the Rams to be able to bounce back. I think that they'll take that loss in New Orleans and utilize that to go on another winning streak. And I believe that Seattle is the first victim. I believe they're going to spread them out. They're going to make Seattle play nickel-dime defense. Hurt them in their secondary, and they're going to try to get off to a fast start. Now, the Rams are going to start trying to make people look bad. When you start coming down the stretch, I know that some of the Rams defenders, Marcus Peters, I know he was very upset with some of the stuff that Sean Payton and guys said. So they're going to get an opportunity to be able to go back onto the field. And after being on a long winning streak, the most important game is that next game. Because now, all of a sudden, Say they slip up, lose a divisional game. Now you're talking about home field advantage, other little things like that. Now they're on a two-game losing streak. So the first 30 minutes, that first half of the football become very important for the Rams, and they have been special when they've played at home.
I know the Seahawks defense has been great because, of course, they have, even though all the personnel changes, top five points, top five or top 10 yards, like top 10 pass defense, top 10 or third down defense. Because of the Seahawks and Pete Carroll, the defense is going to be great. Despite that, I think the Rams are going to be able to score points. Like, the Rams have been able to consistently score points as well as anyone in the league this year other than the Saints and the Chiefs. What I am most interested in watching this game is there have been two Rams defenses this year. The Rams defense against the bad quarterbacks and the Rams defense against the good quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. They have eaten alive the bad quarterbacks on their schedule. And the good quarterbacks on their schedule have eaten them alive. The good quarterbacks on their schedule have thrown 13 touchdowns to zero picks, have a 120 passer rating. The guys that you would look at through this half of the season that are not on that list, three touchdowns to seven interceptions with a 68 rating. We know where Russell Wilson is. He's already played a game where he was in that good category against them, where he played well against them. I need to see this Rams defense, even without Aqib Talib, now that you've got another week with Dante Fowler in the building, now that Marcus Peters should be a week healthier, even if he's a week more humbled from what happened last week, I need to see this Rams defense have the performance I know they're capable of against a good opponent, a good offensive opponent. I'm not worried about the Rams' offense at all. I think because of Todd Gurley, it's going to be one of the most consistent offenses week in, week out in this league. I want to see how the defense does against Russell Wilson.
You mentioned it. Marcus Peters took some issues with what Sean Payton had to say about how that Saints game ended. Do you put most of that loss on the Rams' defense? Do you two think that the key to this game is going to come down to what the Rams can do on that side of the ball?
No, because when you go back over the game, the Saints had a tremendous game plan. How Drew Brees is going to get the ball out, how they were going to isolate the linebackers in space. The protection for the Saints was very, very good for Drew Brees. So, no, the Rams had a great opportunity. They came back, got into it.
Yeah.
They really exerted a lot of energy and built get back into the game. And with the game on the line, one of the most critical plays, they had a one-on-one matchup, Michael Thomas versus Marcus Peters in the slot, and Michael Thomas wins that battle. So it was a significant play because of the totality of it. If he was able to get him on the ground, maybe hold them to a field goal there, you can't give up that type of big play. He guessed the wrong way.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why the Saints were able to get that margin there at the end. So, no, I don't blame him for it. I like the fact that he stood up for it, didn't make any excuses as far as injury. There was motion there. There was bad communication between him and his teammates. He wasn't having any of that. He told the reporter, man, miss me with that. It's my responsibility. So that part right there, Jenna, was very refreshing.
But for Marcus Peters, this second half of the season is very important for him. He's a guy who wants a new contract. He's a guy who's playing for his first real money in the NFL. He's also a guy that, because of the way he exited Kansas City, because of some of the outward, what people would call political statements he's made, and because he is a boom or bust player, he will make a lot of huge plays. He still, since he came into the league, is top three in the NFL in turnovers forced, but he gives up big plays. There, for any of those reasons, there are certain teams that are already, I don't know if he'd be on our free agent list. Like, for him, it's very important that the second half of this season, he reminds people the player that was an all-pro in Kansas City. Because thus far, even prior to last week's game in Los Angeles this year, he hasn't been playing at that level. Now, there hadn't been a game where he got annihilated like this past week, but he hadn't been playing like one of their big offseason acquisitions that they thought he was.
Yeah, I still think he's an elite player, and I believe he's going to get paid handsomely in free agency. Teams out there who would take that personality and disposition. Outwardly, they say that, but at the end of the day, man, it's about getting some horses.
All right, got to take a break. Coming up, former All-Pro wide receiver Herman Moore joins us.
And let's mention horses.
Next on First Things First. As America collectively pauses on Veterans Day to honor those who have served our country, Fox Sports pays tribute to those U.S. service members with special editions of Fox NFL Kickoff and Fox NFL Sunday live from Fort Benning in Georgia before an audience of hundreds of active soldiers and veterans. back here on First Things First. You know, before there was Megatron, there was Herman Moore. Moore mm-hmm. was the dominant wide receiver.
I had to take out some of the Vikings highlights. It was too many of them in there, bro.
For the Detroit Lions for years.
I love the Vikings.
In case you don't remember, he caught 670 passes for over 9,000 yards while making three All-Pro teams in his 12 seasons in the NFL. And lucky us, he joins our show. Hello, Herman.
Good Hi. To see you, hey, it's sir. Good to see you. Thank you.
It's great to see you.
Thanks,
you.
Bro. It's
always.
Good to see you.
Hey, always. Long time no see.
One of the most underrated receivers. Played in an era where probably more great receivers, more Hall of Famers.
A lot of Hall of Famers.
Five Hall of Famers during his era.
Which is what makes the three-time All-Pro all the more impressive. Because All-Pro is different than Pro Bowl. Very select spots. It
yes.
means you were who you were beating out in that era.
And Chris it's also, and when you look at my resume.
The gap?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
It's the reason why. When you're Michael's in there. Next should Herman grab one? Andre Rison grab one. Mike, hey, brother, wasn't many
you
pros.
You can try to set the bar high.
Right.
Oh, there's no
the bar was high.
Because Jerry's just got one column himself, and so you guys are all for about a decade jostling for the other.
And we have some commonality. I think that both of us felt like we're very, very underrated. We played each other a lot. We had some of our ex-teammates play on each other's team. So Herman and I have been knowing each other for a long time. Glad to be able to bring you here to New York, man, to be able to talk a little football.
I appreciate it. Yeah, I'm looking forward to spending a little time and talking to you guys about all this good stuff.
Awesome. All right, let's start with some Dez Bryant, another wide receiver in the news. After being out of football since April, Dez wasted no time getting back in it. Practiced with the Saints for the first time yesterday. His new head coach, Sean Payton, said Dez could play as early as this Sunday against the Bengals. All right, Herman, what do you expect to see from Dez Bryant with the Saints? Will he play? If he does, how much? And most importantly, how much of an impact could he have on this team?
You know, he can have an impact. The biggest thing when you're coming in and you're making a transition from one team to another is to come in and understand how to get your footing under you. If you come in and you're thinking, okay, I'm going to take off where I left off with my other team, you're just not going to have that kind of glue. You know, you got to come in and figure out, okay, how do I fill in the gaps? Because they're bringing you in for a reason. And if you think that all of a sudden you got to win over teammates, you got to win over the fans, you now can't go in with the attitude that I have to be at the level I was when I was leaving another team and try and make everybody a naysayer, you know. But Dez is a good guy. I think he's going to bring a fire. And you look at that 2 and 3 spot, he's going to fill in a gap.
Okay, so that gap right there, let's go third down. So if he was to make an initial impact, we know Sean Payton, very, very creative. We know Kamara coming out of the backfield. We know they got Ingram. We know Michael Thomas they're trying to throw to. But third down and red zone, I would think, or places you think that you would get Dez involved immediately.
Oh, absolutely, because you're getting matchup problems. That's what it is, a league of matchups. If you get Dez going up against a nickelback or going up against a guy that is not that starter, I mean, you got to account for him. He's going to also open it up for a lot of other guys. So Dez is going to be value if he's out there on the field, period.
How hard is it to learn a new system? I understand you played basically the entirety of your career with the Detroit Lions, so I'm not necessarily from your personal experience. But
they did change their coordinator a few times because they had one of the most prolific offenses, three receivers. Three receivers, one back, and then they switched to a couple different offenses when the head coach got fired.
So maybe you can pull from that. Because for Dez, he's going from having only played for Jason Garrett, having played with multiple quarterbacks, so obviously only played with the Cowboys, to not only going to, I think, a complex system in New Orleans, but a team that it's not like they're bringing him in because they've had all these injuries or their offense can't crack 20 points. They are functioning at a very high level. What's the margin, the learning curve for Dez Bryant in something like that?
The learning curve is going to be how does he get to full speed? You know, when you're playing and you have to think, you're coming into a new system. That people don't understand that's a tough task in itself. I remember when I went to actually my last year, I was in New York and I played under Sean Payton as the offensive coordinator under Jim Fossil. And I was trying, when I got there, I was trying to figure out how do I get my wheels going and get back to that full speed. And I felt I was always a step behind. So that's what I look for Dez. If they limit his plays, they can improve his impact.
There's a reason that it took this long for Dez Bryant to get a job. There's going to be some semblance of a, I don't know, him having to relax a little bit of who he was in order to fit into this locker room. He's got a guy like Drew Brees and Sean Payton and the wide receiver coach, Curtis Johnson, who you talk about
CJ
a lot.
CJ is really good, yes.
So as much as he's going to have to learn to get onto the field, how much is he going to have to also adjust to fit into a group where he's not going to be the number one receiver anymore and he's going to have to learn from everyone else around him?
I don't think it's going to be that tough because he understands what a guy like Drew Brees is going to bring to the table. He understands, and I think will have the respect of a Sean Payton. When you come into a system like that, you're trying to say, how do I get my play? How do I come in and contribute? And I think he's found really, he's like, he's got a place that he waited for, and he's in a perfect position. So I think he understands where he is and the opportunity that's in front of him. So I think he'll make the most of it.
Herm, explain to the fans, what is the difference? And do wide receivers like having a great running back or a running attack? And what it does for a big-time receiver, and a lot like you had most of your career playing with someone like Barry Sanders.
Barry Sanders, listen. It takes a lot of pressure off of you. You don't have to come in and feel like you got to be the guy that's got to get everything done. Dez Bryant, like I said, this is a perfect situation for him to step into because he doesn't have to do anything except be Dez. Go out, make some plays, do what you're supposed to do. Don't be a problem. Win over your teammates. But a running game definitely helps, I think, smooth everything out, having that balanced attack so you're not depending just on the passing game.
All right, Herm, let's talk about a former Lion, Golden Tate. He'll make his debut against the Cowboys on Sunday night. Tate will try and bring the Eagles back to the Super Bowl. How much of an impact will Golden Tate have on the Eagles? You assume they want to get him up and running and into that offense pretty quickly.
I think what they're going to like about Golden Tate, and unfortunately for the Lions, what they lost is leadership. Golden Tate is a guy that brings a lot of experience at a high level after coming from Seattle. They're going to get a guy that is a consummate team professional and a player that is there for the team.
You got a lot of respect for Golden Tate,
and
not the numbers, but some of the intangibles. We were talking off the air, and you were like, this is really going to hurt the Lions. So, on the other hand, you know, what's he going to do for the Eagles?
What are the intangibles?
He's a leader, leadership. When things start to go bad, Golden Tate's that guy that comes in, he makes plays. He can take small plays, and he makes it happen. He's tough. He talks about how to bring guys together, and he keeps it light. You know, people underestimate their, you know, when you start to lose and get behind, teams become frantic. Golden Tate is that type of guy that brings everyone together offensively, and I think he was a security blanket for Matthew Stafford.
Is that transferable instantly, not only to a new team, but a new team that's the defending Super Bowl champs? It's one thing to be he was arguably the best offensive player on the Lions other than Matt Stafford, maybe even including Matt Stafford. He'd been there for a few years at this point. Is that transferable, see?
I think when you have a respectable locker room like they do, there's a certain amount of knowledge that you have of other guys. Now, Golden Tate, it's genuine. He's a light guy. He's a funny guy. And the way he plays, he's not a diva receiver. He's not going to be a guy coming in asking for a bunch of demands and everything. So I think veteran players, they already know what his reputation is. And I believe that what they're going to be telling him, and veteran players, they say, man, be yourself. So more they tell him that, then that's when he can actually be himself and you'll start to see his leadership and some of the affection of his personality come out.
Yeah, absolutely, and you hit the nail right on the head. He's going to say the right things in public and he's going to say the right thing in the locker room.
If he's a security blanket for Matthew Stafford, what could he do for Carson Wentz, who doesn't necessarily need that but could very much use another wide receiver, have a good relationship with another receiver like that?
Dependability. It's a guy that when I'm looking for you, I need you to be there, you're going to be there. Golden Tate was a guy, he could be absent for three quarters, but fourth quarter comes along, some guys haven't gotten the ball for three quarters. Not Golden Tate. He's still in the game mentally, and that's what he's going to bring.
The numbers say he's one of the best third down receivers in the league. That's what I think the reliability and dependability you're talking about is about. But they also say he's one of the best yards after catch receivers in
Yeah,
the league.
King.
Yeah, and that is what the Eagles offense is missing because that's what they were so good at last year. What makes a receiver great at that? Why is that a skill set that fits him so well?
First, he's focusing on catching the football. Golden Tate doesn't drop a lot of passes. Once he gets, he's looking to say, how can I get more out of this? But he's doing it in a safe way. He's protecting the ball. He doesn't put it on the ground a lot. But that just shows that his effort. And you look for that, and that's how he gets a lot of his touchdowns. If you look at it, it's not a guy that gets tackled. He gets out. He breaks in. He's short third down by 3 yards. All of a sudden, he gets a first down.
Typically, you see the guys who are like this, people like Pierre Garçon, people like Anquan Boldin. Typically, they have a little more running background in their history. And Golden Tate, that's what he has. Herman and I, we've been wide receivers either or quarterbacks. We weren't running backs because we don't have the type of vision that those guys have. We're used to having our back to the defense, posting guys up, either that or cutting people apart running routes. Golden Tate, with that background as a running back, you can see that the party starts as soon as he gets the ball. He has a lower center of gravity. He's built totally different than big angular guys, a lot like ourselves. So it makes him have better vision. He's lower to the ground. So that elusiveness right there, I believe that what makes him special running with the yards after the catch.
So let's take a broader look then at the Eagles as a whole. They're in a good division where they could actually do something right now. How do you think he helps this team, and where do you think this team goes now? They have a big game against the Cowboys coming up.
That's always a big game. With Golden Tate, it's just another tool. He's another guy that's going to give them that step that they need to get further down the line down in the East. When you look at the Redskins, you look at the Cowboys, I mean, it's a tough division. But with Golden Tate, as you can add players at this point, and this is the championship side of it. These are teams that are getting ready and geared up for the playoffs. Golden Tate provides some stability that perhaps they're going to need going down the stretch here.
All right, tell us a little bit about Football Week in Michigan.
Football Week in Michigan, last year I had an opportunity to tour the state. It's all about football. It's 9 days where we go and we stop and we support our communities in Michigan, where we stop at food banks. We're going to be this week, we're going to end up going and talk to the veterans on Sunday, spend some time watching a football game. So it's a great week if you love football. We do high school, we do college, and then we end with pro.
Nice. Awesome. And then, Herman, you're working with QuickLane to help support veterans. It's an appropriate day for us here in the studio, but tell us a little bit about that.
Well, QuickLane, that's a wonderful thing. The QuickLane Bowl, that is QuickLane Tire and Auto Center. This is their fifth year doing it. It's held in Michigan. Great bowl game is the ACC versus the Big Ten. And there's a program they have called Trading One Uniform for Another. And it's a $10,000 scholarship that's awarded to veterans. And we've opened it up this year to first responders towards an automotive maintenance and repair certification. It's awesome. And we're looking forward to it. And if you want to learn more about it, you can go to qltradingone.com. To see what's going on there. But it's a tremendous program for our men and women of military that are coming in making a transition, or now our first responders that are making that transition. And they can nominate themselves, unlike we could do in the Pro Bowl. And they could do that. So,
and this is something that Herm is not just now starting to do things like this. All throughout his career, he's always made an impact where he played. He's always done a great job there in Michigan. I used to have some football camps. He used to come down, visit the kids for me and everything. So you're talking about a guy that's been not only good on the field, but he's been great for the NFL brand throughout his life. Thanks for visiting with us. Thanks for showing up here in New York. I'm sure the veterans out there around really appreciate your service, too.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you very much for having
me.
All right, we're going to take a break. Much more first thing first right after this.
Three time. All pro. That's it. Nick, how many times I make all pro?
What? Come on, man.
How many, Nick?
Five-time all pro.
Man, Nick, I couldn't get in there. Michael Irvin, Jerry, man, Herm, they stealing stuff. Stealing it, Herm.
Greetings from Bagram, Afghanistan. My name is Warren Officer Warren Clark.
And I'm Major Jeremy Duncan.
I want to give a shout-out to all the Saints players. I hope y'all have a great season. Who that?
And I want to give a shout-out to the big Who That Nation out there. Who that? Who that? Who that said
going to
beat them Saints?
Yeah, that is a little team
passion.
That's
the best
right
NFL
there.
Chant. That's better than Fly Eagles Fly. It's better than that skull clap y'all doofuses do in Minnesota. That's the best chant.
Okay.
That's the best.
All right. I didn't know you rated the chance.
Yeah. Yeah. I got lists. I got all. You want to know the top three NFL? Yeah.
You want his Mount Rushmore?
Number
on
one,
list?
Fly Eagles Fly.
Mm. Okay.
Number two. No, I'm sorry.
You
number
just
one, the
said
Fly. I misspoke. Number one, Who Dat.
Yeah.
Number two, Fly Eagles Fly.
Okay.
Number 32, that skull nonsense.
Okay. Absolutely. No problem. You know you're goofy when you make all these lists. You know you're just stuck on goofy.
But you know like the chance is.
Is the Browns chant a boo? Is that? I can't even get a laugh. You're just going to stand there and just
No, that was bad.
What? Okay.
Yeah. Smartest guy on TV.
Okay. I didn't say it was the funniest guy.
We know that. Cam Newton. Coach Mangini back with us, except that Cam probably hasn't forgotten yet. Just happened. He threw a pick six, was sacked five times, and his team lost by 31 points. Other than that, nothing crazy. Here's Cam on his disappointing performance.
I tell you what, sure enough was a humbling piece of pie, but not only that, it was a learning experience for a lot of guys. And, you know, if we expect to be as good as we expect us to be, we have to find ways to win games like this in a hostile environment. You know, it was extremely loud. You know, we played against a very talented team, like I said before, and we just got to find ways to win football games. You know, we had a lot of our noses bleeding early on, and we just got to stop it and find ways to, you know, keep things going in our favor, offensively, defensively, and special teams, you know, and we just got outplayed today. It happens like this sometimes, and, you know, we're okay with it. What I'm not okay is, you know, just not learning from this, you know, and the guys in that locker room seem to, you know, have a grasp on, you know, what's at stake. You know, we know what we're capable of, being a deep contender playoff team, and we just got to find ways.
Piece of humble pie right there. The king of what, Nick?
Well, malapropisms. He likes, he has some famous ones. Yeah. He said they were the Titanic last year, but he meant it in a good way.
He said hindsight was?
50-50 okay. Instead of 20-20. I like it. It's charming.
Coach, how concerning was this loss last night by the Panthers?
Well, my youngest son is a Panthers fan. And
he got the jersey and everything, right?
He's all in.
So he's got to get the next level. Next level of Cam fandom is the pajamas. That's what Nick has.
he's not rocking the pajamas yet. Nick had Kansas City pajamas.
Oh, my God. These guys. Can we talk about the football game? Jokes.
So when I was talking to him last night, I said, look, whether you lose by 50 or you lose by one, the loss counts the same. It's a Thursday night game. It's not like they had a week to prepare, so you got to take that into account as well. So I don't, it was bad, but there's been a lot of people that have gone into Heinz Field and had it steamrolled like that, had it happen like that. So from a big picture perspective, it's one loss. It's a bad loss. And Cam's point about taking something positive away from this, that's the only thing you can do when you go and you get beat like that. Mm-hmm. And when you listen to the Steelers defense talk, their philosophy on handling Carolina, I think, is something that other people should match. They weren't going to let Cam be a runner. They were not going to let Cam be a runner, and they were going to hit him every time they could. So you saw that first drive where everybody was going after Cam. They were allowing Christian McCaffrey big chunks of yard, but that was part of the program. They were establishing, if you want to run, we are going to hit you, and we are concentrating on that. And once they did that, Cam stopped being a runner. And it had the effect that they ultimately were looking for.
And that's the thing with Carolina. If you can take them not out of their running game, but how they want to run it. Because no team has as many runners with over 300 yards rushing. They're rushing the ball from a lot of different ways. Right. Reverses. They got wide receivers touching it. So how they've gotten to where they're doing it is totally different. I like the game plan that they did have. I didn't like the fact that Cam was not protective of that football early. With that game tied 7-7, it can go either way. We don't know what they're going to do. We've had one drive. We drove straight down. They had a one-play drive. So now I get the ball back. I am not expecting a veteran quarterback to make that play early in the game, especially on the road. If this game was in the playoffs, do you play it any different? Yes, of course you do. So why don't you appropriate that safety you would take in a playoff game, a game in November against one of the better teams? That's how he should have been thinking about taking care of the football early.
Safety.
And that's what led to the snowball effect of the game getting out of control.
So this one I want you to explain to me. Because while I'm a fan of Cam's, I've been critical of his really bad plays. And I think he's had far worse plays he got away with this year than this one, when I'm watching it live. Because in my mind, a safety is about the worst thing you can do on a football field, because it's not only 2 points for the opposition, but they get the ball typically in good field position.
No, one of the worst things you can do is throw a pick six. Or a fumble for a touchdown.
Agree.
Especially after they just scored on a 75-yard touchdown.
You have to be in the moment. That's the part that I had a problem with.
But those are, correct. A pick six and a fumble are literally the worst, or a fumble six, literally the worst things you can do there. But let me, if this ball, if he throws it away up to the sideline, it's intentional grounding. Like, right, he is in
that
moment.
So what? That's a safety, too. That. That was a better decision than the one he made.
If it's just picked there, if it's picked and not returned, do you feel the same way?
It was a dumb decision. You don't throw a pick backed up. Like, it's not Cam's fault for the interception, but when Watt has you out-leveraged and he contacts you, man, Watt is a big dude, all right? Bad things are going to happen. Just eat it. It's not Keenum's fault he's there, but what you do in that decision, the coaches are relying on you. Okay, Norv said, I'm in a bad spot. I didn't have the right play called, Cam. I'm depending on you to stop the house from burning down. No, Cam didn't. Cam threw another bucket of gas. Go ahead and burn down. So now the route was on after that pick.
And Cam talks about learning from the loss. And one of the things that you're constantly trying to teach young quarterbacks is to not make a bad situation worse. And that's exactly what he did. He took a really bad situation, which is this safety, and he turned it into a touchdown after the momentum had already changed from the long pass, and now you get the crowd back involved. So a veteran quarterback, okay, look, I've got the safety. It's not great. It's not what I wanted, but you don't.
And from a football teaching standpoint, a safety is not a bad play. Kicking the ball off to them, especially in real time, being down by 2 points, I mean, we got 3.5 quarters to go. We're down by 2 points early in the game in Pittsburgh. Oh, that's no hill for us to climb.
Which is why, to me, while I'm watching it in real time before I've talked to you guys, the most disappointing part of the game to me on the Cam and Carolina offense perspective wasn't that play. It was the three plays right after that. Because you go up 7-0, you drive systematically down the field. You then give up a huge play to Juju, and then immediately that happens. Three touchdowns scored in 30 seconds of game time. That next drive is critical. That next drive, you have to find a way to get points. You have to find a way to at least flip field position. They went three plays, 1 yard, punt the ball away immediately. And that was, to me, the drive that really set the game up for Pittsburgh to be blowing them out.
This is what we talked about yesterday. When you talk about why Cam Newton isn't in the conversations with some of the other, and I know you're probably going to get upset here with some of the other quarterbacks, it's the inconsistency. And we got away from it for a couple weeks, but do you find
Hold on. The reason you're saying I'm going to get upset is because we got to be accurate. We didn't get away from it for a couple weeks. It's been 8 weeks. 8 weeks of the season hadn't had what we would call, he's had one mediocre game statistically. The team's 6-2. Yesterday, he made what these guys are saying is a terrible play. He was going to be safety, should have taken the safety, fine. But there isn't a quarterback in football. This year, other than Drew Brees, is there a quarterback in football that we can't point to either at least one mediocre game or at least a few really
What's
bad decisions?
What's his reputation? Decisions? What's Cam Newton's reputation?
Right, but this
inconsistent.
Is inconsistent. Inconsistent going into this year.
And it sort of reared its ugly head a little bit this year.
When? I guess I'm not seeing
This is the commentary typically because Cam's the biggest name on Carolina. You could assume if people didn't watch the game and saw it was a blowout, well, Cam must have been inconsistent. No, I'm just talking about how you stop the snowball from going down the hill. And it starts with Cam Newton. You guys ask me, what's one of the most important plays in the game? Cam Newton,
yes,
allowing their defense that hadn't been creating a whole bunch of turnovers to score defensively, and also educating sports fans to realize a safety is not a bad play in football in real time. We're tied. We're not going to lose the game with the safety. But if you allow it, man, if I allow that snowball, oh, it's going to become an avalanche. Those are plays. And when you're not aware of it, is Cam going to learn? Yeah, they got a lot of players, young players. They're secondary, they're corners. We hope that they learn from playing in that environment. But is their leader Cam Newton? Yes, he has been inconsistent throughout his career. This is his all-time high as far as completion percentage. So I'm not going all the way back to saying he's inconsistent. I'm just reporting the news for what it is. All right? Cam Newton could have had an effect on that game early on. He didn't. So I'm criticizing him with the rest of them. All right? So that's the way it is. If you want to be able to take the credit, then also when the thing starts going the other way, you got to take the heat.
Right. And to Jenna's point, we talked about it yesterday prior to the game. The reputation of these two guys and Cam's ability to dig out of a bad situation. So the Steelers give up that first drive, and what does Ben do? He comes on the field, boom, immediately they hit the big play, everything changes, and it's like it goes back to balance. And then Cam has a chance to do that same thing, to come out and do the same thing for his group. And what happens, you have the decision that he makes. Now, is it fair to say that his whole season has been inconsistent? No, but when you look at a track record of a guy, you give one guy the benefit of the doubt because of his history, and The other guy is unfortunately judged by his history as well.
Absolutely. But the point that I'm making is, and I don't think I've ever said that I think Cam Newton's better than Big Ben. I think Big Ben is one of the five best quarterbacks we have in football and has been for a decade. But what I knew was going to happen throughout all day on television today is Cam, a guy who is kind of actually up until this week flown under the radar. This year, not been talked about a lot, not been one of the big stories of the season, despite having the best first half of the season of his career. His team loses a game where they give up 52, and the story is going to be, oh, is bad Cam Newton back? I don't think that's a fair representation of what happened.
No, but it is fair to ask the question. It's up to us to make sure the story is fair.
Sure.
But the question is fair. If you didn't watch the game, if you don't know football, it's fair to get on here and be like, hey, Carolina, they went on the road. They were bad. Was Cam Newton part of it? Then it's up to us to put some legs around that so people understand. No, this wasn't the case. They ran into a buzzsaw in Pittsburgh.
And it's up to Cam Newton to change the narrative. So he's done a good job through these eight games. Now he's hit this roadblock. How does he respond? And we know how he's historically responded. Let's see how he responds now.
Next week and the next few.
All right, Coach, stick around. Got to take a break. Coming up is Sunday, a must-win for the Dallas Cowboys. Zeke seems to think so. That's next. This is First Things First.
For military men and women, the desire to serve is in their core. Yet when they come home, too often their potential remains untapped. We're building a movement of veterans and volunteers joining forces to transform our neighborhoods. We go beyond community service. We're a catalytic force driving lasting impact across the country. We are. The mission continues. To serve alongside us or donate, visit missioncontinues.org.
Fox Sports is proud to partner with the Mission Continues, a nonprofit organization deploying military veterans to build stronger communities across the nation by improving schools, revitalizing parks, and fostering neighborhood development. Visit www.missioncontinues.org to learn more.
That's
great
awesome.
Stuff.
One really of our stuff. Friends in the audience today is with Mission Continues. It's a really, really cool organization, really cool thing we do. I'm excited.
Yeah, they got some hot takes, too.
Oh, yeah.
Military.
Friends in the audience.
They watch some shows in football.
All right, back to the NFL now. The Cowboys.
Couple of points are a little better than yours, Nick, but I'll get you after the show.
Easily.
Boys and the boys. Cowboys are heading to Philadelphia to take on the defending Super Bowl champs. Dallas coming off a brutal loss to Tennessee Monday night. They're sitting at 3-5. Ezekiel Elliott was asked if this week was a do-or-die game for the Cowboys' playoff chances.
100%. Yeah, it's a must-win. Being a division game, you know, it makes it that much more important. And definitely the ones must win, us versus the world. We got to go out there and win as many ball games we can, you know, to give ourselves the opportunity to get in the playoffs. So, we need to attack that the right way and prepare so we're ready.
They get to come into our house, Sunday Night Football. You know, everyone's always excited for the Cowboys in general. Now it's national television, all that fun stuff. So for us, we really just simplify it one game at a time, and we're excited. We're definitely excited for this matchup.
All right, Coach, so the Dallas Cowboys have four division games left. So they could make a move. The question is, with the personnel that they have, could they actually make any real moves within the NFC East when you look at this game coming up?
I always struggle when a guy says it's a must-win early in the season or even eight games into the season. So what happens if you lose? Do you give up on the rest of the season? Or all those other games, they just don't matter? So one of the things...
What's the wording, Coach, that you typically teach people to like use in these situations compared to must-win? Because you know the question's coming.
It's absolutely coming. But if you just really focus on the moment ahead as opposed to what the playoff picture looks like, what happened in the past, the only thing that you can control is this moment. And when you start adding pressure to a situation, when you start adding expectations to a situation, instead of really just focusing on the task at hand, you're caught up in the wrong things. And to me, that's one of the things that's really difficult to teach a team to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the things that New England's done successfully for a long time. I'm not saying it's easy, but when you add all this pressure to a situation that's already pressured up, You know, guys don't necessarily perform their best or focus on the best things.
One thing Coach Mangini's talking about, too, is it's the focus week in and week out on them getting better.
Yeah.
The question for Zeke should have been, the response should have been, well, we need to improve our running game. We need to improve our pass protection. We got to be better on third down. And that's what Coach is alluding to. It's still don't get away from what it takes to win. Don't have your eye on the winning part. What it takes is good football. They need to be able to make some big plays in the passing game. They need to be a little more creative against this Eagles defense. Why is this Eagles defense struggled? Well, what can we do to make them continue struggling in the areas of lack of pass defense? They're 25th in the league. So things like that, they help you win games compared to ultimately putting all the pressure, because all the guys aren't ready to be like, well, man, what if we do lose? Well, how do I concentrate the rest of the way? Do I still keep getting massages? Do I still keep coming in early? Like, you can lose a lot of people, so you don't want to have that win or die mentality, because you can lose a lot of guys in that locker room. Is let's concentrate on trying to play better. It's a divisional game. How do we do these things on the road? And for me, I need to be able to make some deep plays, deep passing plays, so I can make that defense soften up so I can get back to the things that I know are successful. That's running Zeke, and I would put Dak on more RPOs than any other time in his career. They do need to win this game, but if they don't do those things, winning is not going to be the end result for him.
Okay, Nick, break it down. What do you think is the key to this matchup, Eagles and Cowboys?
Oh, listen, if the Eagles don't win this game, they got the same record as Dallas. We're already firing Dallas's coach and thinking about getting rid of their quarterback. And the Eagles, the defending champs, if they don't beat the Cowboys, they both sitting there at 4-5. I understand Dallas saying must win, and you don't want them saying that. I get why the Cowboys feel that way. For Philly, okay, you have. It took you half a season. You fought your way through it. Win loss. You haven't had back to back wins all year. You've only had one explosive offensive game all year. The key to the Philadelphia Eagles, in my mind, in this football game, is to, even though I know it's a new season from last year, you got a lot of the same personnel. You have upgrades at some of the spots you were supposed to be best at. Look like you know. We know you can look. Your quarterback the last month's been doing his part. Show Carson Wentz the last month after missed the first couple games, and then last month of football on the right. That's his almost MVP season on the left. 10 touchdowns, one pick, a 120 passer rating, 8.5 yards per pass, 73% completions. He's been excellent. So why haven't the Eagles been the team they were last year? Situationally, they haven't been as good. As a team, they haven't been as good on third down. As a team, they haven't been as good in the red zone. Their defense has not been the dominant force as far as getting to the opposing team's quarterback. The secondary that we thought was playing over its skis last year, we've been proven right to a degree this year.
Up and down their personnel, up and down the players.
But it's the same. But the one thing that none of the Eagles players can use as an excuse is the team's not giving them all the support in the world. Howie Roseman, for the second straight year, goes out and says, I will give up one of these precious draft picks to add a player to our team that can help us right now. They went out and they spend right up to the cap. They're not carrying over money year over year. Like, the Eagles are doing everything they can to be the Seahawks. And by that, I mean win a Super Bowl, come back right next year, and be right there in it. Like, but the players are playing like it was a one-year thing. The players are playing like they're the 2010 Ravens, or there was the 2012 Ravens. The Ravens team with Flacco that won the Super Bowl most recently, where haven't been back to the playoffs since. Like, that's what the players are playing like.
It's hard. I told you. After you win a Super Bowl, it's hard. It's no longer you're not the underdog. You're not wearing the mask. It's not you. All the things that they use to propel themselves. Yeah, and now everybody gets up to play you. And week after week after week, you have to perform at a level that was not only as good as the previous year, but it was better than the previous year. Everybody studied you. Everybody has looked at your strengths, your weaknesses. So it's a different formula. Now, they're in a pretty good position.
Yes.
They are in a good position. This division is not out of hand. This division is not one that they can't win. They just pick up Golden Tate. To me, the pressure to some degree, and I know Doug Peterson talked about this, they're not getting the media coverage they used to get. There is an element of that moving off. They're in a great spot to propel themselves back into the conversation.
When you say they're not out of it, the team that's ahead of them, Washington, is coming off what has to be their worst loss of the year, not because they lost to Atlanta. And Atlanta
because they lost their whole team.
Right. An Atlanta team that, by the way, has played very well since that 1-4 start. But you lost both starting guards in Washington for the season in a game. You still don't have Trent Williams. You lost your wide receiver, and your right tackle's dinged up. Like, so the team you're chasing is a team that right now is in on the most important spot on the field, the offensive line, in disarray, which is why this is an opportunity for Philadelphia this week against Dallas. And so, I mean, this is a huge game for Philly. I know we talk a ton about the Cowboys. Cowboys, even if they win this game, they are maxing out at 8 or 9 wins. Philly still could be a contender. But they have to win this weekend.
And Philly, I got to look ahead to the schedule, Coach. I know, don't take away my points, all right, Coach? Week 13, Washington at Philadelphia. In week 17, Washington's got Philadelphia. So, man, that offensive line won't be repaired by then.
No.
So that's a great opportunity for the Eagles.
Last word?
I think that this is one of those divisions that you could win at 9-7 or 10-6. And look, if Philly gets back into the playoffs, they're going to cause some
with
problems.
A home playoff game. So yeah. Absolutely. So
I'm sure they're going to invite you back too.
Here. Okay. Coach, thanks so much for hanging. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
See you back here hopefully next week. Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter, Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.